while we were basically announcing some of our fasting experiments, Jesse was actually getting back to us and said, guys, you have to catch up. Some people have actually been really interested in the ketosis-inducing therapeutic fasting thing. And I'm putting together a virtual starve-in. And so far, I mean, at that point, when you got the first message, there were like 14 people already on board to basically remote fasting.
Yeah. So starving is the new black. It's now hipster.
Yes.
It's now a thing.
I'm hobo CEO. Hobo CEO. My company is wherever I go. I'm hobo CEO. I'm hobo CEO.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers or no trousers at all.
Hello, you hobos and lady hobos. New episode of the Hobo CEO podcast. And what's our clickbait title for today?
Starving is the new black.
We're, as you may notice, we're actually in the same location, Chiang Mai, Thailand, speaking in the same mic. And today we have a rather interesting rumination on the topic of fasting.
Why don't we try to give a little preview at the beginning as to what we're actually going to talk about and cover?
So the bullet points are your research with Nassim Taleb's help on random fasting, Jesse's podcast, which talks about ketosis versus cancer, and fasting as a anti-cancer strategy.
Then the fact that fasting is not as modern as we make it. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Then we're going to talk about extended periods of fasting, in which Chris has some very interesting experience. And throughout the episode, we are going to share some of our personal experiences so far.
Absolutely. So let's kick off with how you stumbled into this, Nico.
Yeah, so it must have been sometime in November or December of 2014 when Nassim Taleb on Twitter published a little paper, as he usually does through Google Docs. The title is just Fasting. It's going to be linked to in the show notes. So I read this. It said like, yeah, you know, naturalistic approach to fasting. It has to be somewhat randomized. And then there's some math, and I didn't understand the math. So
let me clarify. When you say naturalistic, you're really talking about our kind of ancestors.
Yes.
You know, the cavemen.
Yeah. So his approach was, if we want to imitate the natural occurring periods of famine, I think that's how he phrased it, then we cannot fast, let's say, every Monday or something like this.
It's too regular.
It's
our not cavemen ancestors, which we presume our bodies are designed for that environment, would have had control over their lives.
Exactly. So it gets back to the anti-fragile, random stressors improve the system kind of idea. So I was intrigued. I didn't really understand the math and the graphs and the tables he was including in the paper. I reached out to Chris and said, can you explain, can you help me look into the math of this paper? And Chris was busy with something else, and he said, let's get back to it once we're meeting in Chiang Mai. So I forgot about it until Taleb mentioned his New Year's resolutions for 2015. He had a couple of interesting resolutions in the past. For example, he was trying to be punctual to all meetings for 1 year, and he was, put a lot of, what is it, if you have a backup?
Redundancy.
He put a lot of redundancy in his time planning and so on. And so I was reading through the draft of his resolutions, and one in particular resonated, which was fast 1 day every week on average. I thought, that's a cool idea. I really wanted to try fasting for 1 day for quite some time, I heard about. So I was trying to get the randomizing down. I said, like, I want to have 52 random numbers between 1 and 365. have somebody else basically determine, randomized the days on which I'm going to fast in 2015. Now, that didn't work really well because I found a lot of consecutive and even consecutive triples and quadruple day, whatever. So you can read about this in a little article. I wrote up the whole thing in a little thing I called Random Days of Fasting. And then I called Chris and I said, I need you.
You called your math genius friend.
My math genius friend. The only person I know who studied math. And I said, like, how can I make a rule so that there's no two consecutive days in my fasting? And Chris really didn't answer the question in terms of, like, here's the mathematic approach.
Yeah, because there's a simple solution.
Yes, which is?
Which every household can do. Basically, you just roll two dice because the average score of two dice is 7. And you can't roll a 1 if you roll 2 dice.
Yes.
So a nice elegant solution.
Very elegant solution.
Even more elegant because you just whip out your iPhone and say, Siri, can you roll 2 dice?
Which Siri can, and she actually gives me the result right away. So I thought, bingo. That's better than even having to buy and walk around with 2 dice in my pocket.
How precisely does it work, Nico? What's your regime here?
I only determine the next fasting day. When I was sure that I want to do the fasting, I think the first time I tried it, she said something like, it's 5 and 1 this time. My first day of fasting was a Sunday. And then on that Sunday, maybe the latest the next day, because this can't be the next fasting day, as we just discussed, I pull out my phone again and I ask Siri to roll 2 dice. And she tells me,
4 and 3 or something.
4 and 3, yeah.
So your next fast is 7 days away.
Yeah, actually, the first couple of times it was less than 7, to which Anke was complaining. She's like, oh, it's getting too close. And I said, like, it could also be 12, but the probability is it's always close to 7. Yeah. In the research, I came across a couple of articles, fasting for 1 day, fasting for 3 to 4 days. Then I also realized that in a recent episode of the Smart Drug Smarts podcast by our friend Jesse Lawler, he had an expert on the subject, and the show was called, another clickbait title,
Ketosis versus Cancer?
Question mark.
And they had Dr. Seyfried from the Boston College, who has been through a lot of research because it's apparently quite a well-researched topic. Basically, there's this state your body goes in called ketosis after several days of not having any food. Your body starts recycling itself and it sort of breaks down the inefficient cells in your body and extracts the nutrients. And this is apparently a very good anti-cancer strategy and good for general health as well.
It's basically a metabolic rejuvenation kind of thing.
You should listen to the podcast. It's a really interesting episode.
Yeah, and I thought it was related to my fasting. I was still building up some research to get me going. A couple of interesting points to me were, the doctor mentioned it's no problem to starve yourself or not eat for quite some time. He said, like, if you're in regular health and shape and form, you could be
easily. No problem.
A month should,
and
a month.
People who are obese, like 6 months.
If you have enough body fat and stuff, you could go for quite some time. And I thought, wow, didn't Chris tell me about extended periods of fasting in the past? And wouldn't that explain a little bit about that? So I definitely forwarded the podcast episode, recommended it right away to Chris and said, hey, listen to this and we should talk about it. Then also in the episode, the doc mentions that the best prevention from his point of view of cancer would be to have a 7-day water fast. We're talking always about water fast. So it's water, herbal tea, and in our cases, we also allow ourselves to some espresso or a black coffee.
So no macronutrients.
Yes. She said like a 7-day water fast once a year would be advantageous to cancer prevention. Now, as soon as I decided to do the 1-day average thing and we had figured out the elegant way of determining the fasting days, I also got my girlfriend on board. Since Chris was hearing about it and already on his way to Chiang Mai, when did you come in? The 4th?
It was early January.
Early January. He was on his way and he said, like, let's sync up I'm also going to sync with you on the fasting days. And I said, I thought that's great. So I don't have to sit around, watch Chris have lunch. And so we have now had like 3 fasting days under our belt. They went pretty fine. What are our experiences so far? What would you sum up?
As we'll get into, I'm quite experienced with doing fasts. So, you know, it's pretty kind of standard thing for me to do now. But
you also do a lot of intermittent fasting.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's very common that I'll not eat until the evening. I'll have no meals until the evening. So for me, it's more just like pushing through the evening and like just kind of counting the hours till I can go to sleep. But generally, you know, it's a productive day because, you know, you're not thinking about food, you're not preparing food, you're not digesting food. It kind of carves out a few extra hours in my day. However, you do feel a bit strange. It's not like, it's not the best time to bank on maximum productivity, even though you might actually have more kind of energy and attention. It's a good day to relax. You know, it's a good day to plan for some relaxing activity or maybe some physical activity rather than just like a normal work day.
I agree with that. The time gain is substantial, even though while being in Thailand, we never or only rarely prepare of food ourselves. You don't go for lunch, you don't go for dinner. You also don't experience, especially during the work day, I mean, dinner, being sleepy after dinner, I usually don't mind, but getting sleepy after lunch sometimes is a little counterproductive. So that's all gone. So there's a couple of hours extra in your day. And I would add that until about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, I think I'm functioning as normal. Then I'm getting really hungry and I'm also getting a bit more like weak.
I think what happens is you're probably detoxing.
Yeah, and also I think you're switching from the blood sugar is definitely depleted and you're switching to the whatever the next step in the... Read the article. I have linked to some stuff about it. Whatever the next... and we're not reaching ketosis with the 24-hour... or it's not even 24-hour water fast. We usually stop eating when we go to bed, and then we quote unquote actually break fast the day after.
The following day.
So yeah, the following
day. 36 hours.
Probably. Something 36 hours should be right about right. As we said, starving is the new black, and a lot of people, you know, do weightlifting. They talk about intermittent fasting, and, you know, a lot of people experiment with their diets and when to eat, how much to eat, and so on. I mean, I'm really focusing on these random stress factors on the body, on the system. And we didn't mention this with the two dice, Chris, but what Taleb says is it might have been pretty common for our ancestors to not eat, let's say, once a week, which is what we are imitating right now. But then also he says with lesser probability, it might be the case that you don't eat for 2 consecutive days. And then with an even lesser probability that you don't eat for 3 consecutive days.
Mm. So the quick hack was to you roll your 2 dice, then you roll a single dice. And if you roll a 6, then the fast is you do a 2-day fast instead of just a 1-day fast.
Which would mean you're doing it on a 6 weeks.
Yeah.
6 weeks.
So you could get more scientific and precise, but we won't get into that. But just the idea is you could add that extra random by doing a further dice roll.
Yeah. Now, in the meantime, while we were basically announcing some of our fasting experiments, Jesse was actually getting back to us and said, guys, you have to catch up. Some people have actually been really interested in the ketosis-inducing therapeutic fasting thing, and I'm putting together a virtual starve-in. And so far, I mean, at that point when you got the first message, there were like 14 people already on board to basically remote fasting.
Yeah. So starving is the new black. It's now hipster.
Yes.
It's now a thing.
And it's going to start on February 16th.
Yeah. Joining the virtual starve-in.
We're doing the not eating thing. And I wanted to say that even though this all sounds like a really, you know, like modern biohacking kind of self-optimization kind of stuff, I think also...
It's a pretty old thing.
Yeah, it's a very, very old thing.
But basically, you know, a lot of religions and practices have involved some sort of fasting. And you were talking about the forest monks.
Yeah.
Where they, what do they do? They go into the forest.
So I did a little, not really related research. I'm started reading and listening to some Buddhist teachings and stuff. And I came across this one monk that was recommended by our friend Darren Joe. His name is Ajahn Jayasaro, of British origin, lives in Thailand, a Thai monk. And he talked a little bit about the history of the monks, and he said that in the earlier days there were the forest monks and the village monks, and the village monks basically at their monastery was either the center of the village or very close to a village, and they had a lot of contact with the lay people. And the forest monks, on the other hand, would live a little more secluded and would have to walk through the forest long walks in order to get to the lay people and prepare food, because Buddhist monks are not allowed to, traditionally speaking, grow plants. They're not even allowed to pick fruit from a tree or something like that. So they basically have to ask the lay people for donations, like alms round, that's what it's called.
Mm.
So first of all, they have to walk through the forest, and then sometimes they come across a spot that they think is very suitable for doing some meditation. And the forest monks are particularly emphasizing meditation practice. So they might stay there. And he said, so if there's water close by, they might stay in that place for a couple of days or up to a week, he said, until they go to a nearby village. And as far as I understood, he has done this kind of practice himself. So I thought, that sounds pretty much like fasting, you know. Also, if you do Vipassana retreats, for example, you only eat twice a day, breakfast and lunch. You don't eat, you get up really, really early, but you don't eat after 12 o'clock, after noon. So there we have a very traditional way of intermittent fasting. And Ajahn Jayasaro mentioned that the forest monks are even only eating once a day. I think they basically only have breakfast with the traditionally like the one bowl thing which they eat. So they are, you could say, traditionally in a calorific restriction group.
Yeah.
They are very used to fasting.
It's a fairly established practice. For hundreds, maybe thousands of years, fasting has been a fairly established practice.
Yeah. So when I was listening to Jesse's interview with Dr. Seyfried, and he said that it's no problem at all, he was pretty enthusiastic about it.
Well, let's clarify that. He wasn't saying like, you know, it's a walk in a park. He's saying, you know, it's an uncomfortable experience fasting for extended periods, but it's perfectly healthy and doable.
Yes. Once he talked about like a month without food and even longer than that, I was reminded of the story that Chris told me, I don't know, 2 years back in Berlin. So, Chris, when, how, why, what circumstances did you get into fasting in your earlier days?
So I guess I was already experimenting with my diet and lifestyle and health quite a lot. I was doing Kung Fu, Tai Chi, I'd been a vegetarian, a vegan, raw food. And I kind of generally found that if I had fasting every now and then, or I was eating a little bit less, I generally felt better. So I think I kind of, in my own way, discovered calorific restriction without really, you know, reading about it. However, the interesting experience was a friend of mine who was a bit extreme and eccentric found out about this woman who said that she was a breatharian. And I thought it was a bit silly, really. I thought, why would you just live off breath? You know, food's actually quite tasty. But anyway, he really liked the idea. And she came to our town and did a seminar. And I wasn't interested in it. But he decided he wanted to do this.
Just before you continue, The idea is a breatharian is actually a thing. You can look it up. It's a spiritual new age kind of idea in which you basically get used to not eating material food, or how would you?
I just simply the idea is you don't need to eat.
You get
your energy from other sources.
And okay,
I think you know, prana was the, I don't know. It is a bit of a kind of not unscientific thing. So we went to the seminar, and I thought, yeah, this isn't really for me. It's a bit kind of new age. It's a bit kind of hippie. I don't really buy it. But my friend did. He bought the book, and he was like, right, I'm going to do this tomorrow. Or it was like it was Friday, and he wanted to do it on Monday. And me being the competitive type that I am, I'm like, right, I'm going to do it as well then. I didn't want to get left behind. So basically the book described this process, which was the process to become a breatharian, and it was the 21-day process. So the first 7 days were no food or water, and then the remaining 2 weeks were no food and water, or possibly dilute fruit juice, very diluted fruit juice. And yeah, so we basically did this process. We didn't go on any special retreat or anything. We just stayed at home. We kind of emerged from the end of the process fairly skinny, but you know, it wasn't that difficult, really. It was just very boring. That was the I always remember the hardest part was it was boring. Obviously, you know, this was quite an extreme thing to do at the time, and it really did shift my mindset, and I did start buying into this breatharian idea. And you know, I was quite young and impressionable at the time. So after this, you know, the following, I guess, about 2 years, or, you know, the following years, in fact, I was basically on this, I don't know, what would you say, rather pitiful diet that wasn't really resembling a normal healthy diet at all. Whilst the book was recommending that you continue for another 6 months with no food to prove to yourself that you really are breatharian, I didn't do that. You know, one of the things the book was saying is, like, once you do this process, you know, you can eat stuff if you want, but you know, you don't need it for nutrition. So what happened is we just end up eating like crisps and snacks and sweets. So for quite a long time, really, you know, I was just eating just a small amount of junk food. Like, you know, I'd have a packet of crisps one day and then nothing the next day, maybe another packet of crisps, maybe a cake. It was quite a extreme diet. Anyway, to cut a long story short, basically I sort of gradually tapered back into slightly more normal eating because I quite like cooking. I also had a girlfriend, which was, you know, it makes it a bit difficult. You know, food is a big part of relationships. So there's two things here. One is, don't really need to try and explain the 21-day fast or the, you know, the period after we've not eating a very healthy diet. I think, you know, it's the science is there. Dr. Seyfried, he's, you know, saying the same thing. You know, the body can go a long time without food. And maybe, you know, my kind of strange diet of crisps and things, it was a bit kind of strange, but I was actually, you know, I was healthy. I was always doing kind of exercise and things. And I think it's a testament to how kind of flexible the human body is and how it can tolerate strange things for even extended periods. The one thing that does kind of stand out is the 7 days without any water, which, you know, the scientific consensus is that, you know, you shouldn't be able to survive that long. But the way I reconcile this is, I was just at home in a stress-free environment, very much believing that this was okay. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think many people have ever really tested this under kind of, you know, double-blind placebo conditions. It's a very difficult thing to test because perhaps most of the instances of people not having access to water, they've also been in some other extreme situation. You know, maybe it's like some sort of crash or something where they need to be rescued. I think it's a very different circumstance.
Okay, a couple of questions on the breatharian diet experience. During the, especially during the first 7 days, was it was the hunger or the thirst the bigger problem?
Definitely thirst. I think thirst stuck out far more than hunger. It was actually, you know, the whole period, hunger didn't really factor in that much because after a few days, you kind of get used to this sort of rhythm that you're not eating. And You do feel a bit strange sometimes, and it does feel, you know, it's not exactly the most comfortable thing. But I just remember right at the end of it, I wasn't like, right, I want a burger.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I felt like I could have just carried on waiting. In fact, I did wait quite a while. I didn't eat anything for quite a while. And it's like you get out the habit of eating. So like the idea of hunger that you get when your tummy's rumbling, yeah, when you've kind of missed lunch, it's a different kind of thing. It's not hunger in the normal sense. It's more, you know, you just kind of feel a bit sort of strange. And boredom was the kind of main thing, because like the suggestion for this 21 days was to be meditative and quiet. So actually it was more like a retreat, really. We were kind of sat in silence, just meditating a large amount of the time. And, you know, we didn't sit there watching YouTube. Well, there's no YouTube back then.
I remember that the context when you shared the story back in Berlin was that this was your belief-changing event from which you derived, well, not everything that's quote-unquote common scientifically and accepted and so on and so forth has to be the limit of what one can do.
Yeah.
And apart from some minor negative effects or whatever, I remember that this was like your major learning that you... And I think a lot of people need something like that. It basically was like your own personal fire walk. You know, the fire walk is like the modern organized ritual where people do something which they don't believe is possible or not really believe it's possible. But then once they do it, they sometimes do other things.
They go on to become Superman or Batman.
Yeah. Or they do a couple of more firewalk speeches because they don't get the
idea. This is a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, this is perhaps a fodder for another a different podcast we could go into deeper. But it is one of the key things was, you know, it was very much a belief change. You know, going from this, the notion that you were relying on these fruits and biscuits and celery or whatever for your lifeblood, your calories, to actually you don't need it at all. That was, that was a big shift. Actually, just kind of drop in this moment, I wouldn't advise doing what I did. It was, you know, it's quite a risk. I might just have been lucky. As I said, you know, reconciling the 7 days without water, I really wouldn't recommend messing with that kind of thing. It's good, you know, it is good to do things which could change your mindset, but do it with care, because I was kind of young and impressionable. And I don't know, it could have ended badly. So it's kind of a tricky thing, because I think it's important to have an open mind and to try things and explore new frontiers. But
that's why when it reminded me of how you told me this, you didn't tell me the story and you were pretty careful about sharing it at that time anyways, but you didn't tell it, you know, I don't need to eat anything, or I'm, you know, you didn't brag about it. I mean, you basically used it as an example where you said, like, you know, not everything that everybody believes is possible or not possible might be exactly possible possible. I just wanted to say, you know, add that there's a different aspect to it. And maybe we should also mention, I mean, you kind of faded out of this, but you also then had another change.
Another shift, just to clarify, I don't believe in this breatharian thing, and I haven't really followed it, to be honest. You know, all I know I've done is I didn't drink for an extended period, which is quite unusual, and I've also just, you know, Dr. Seyfried's, you know, the podcast with Jesse, you'll hear the same thing, that humans can go quite comfortably fairly extended periods without food. So I don't feel I've, like, done anything that extreme. Or rather, I've just done something that's extreme, but not that much of a paradigm shift. However, I didn't think that for several years. Whilst I was kind of eating the crisps and gradually eating more normal food, I still kind of held this belief that it was like optional. It wasn't required. And the real shift came was when I had this throat infection and I was ill for a couple of weeks. And I tried some antibiotics, but it didn't help. And ended up seeing this acupuncture doctor. My throat cleared up, but also noticed that I wasn't that well. And I talked to him about my diet and everything. And actually, I had developed issues with food, not surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had trouble digesting a lot of food, and I tended to eat only certain food types and not that very not often. So what happened was my acupuncture doctor, who had healed me from my throat infection, kind of had my trust. And he said, Chris, you should, you know, have the three square meals again. You know, you don't want to mess your digestion system up. You want to, trust me, try it out. So I had to kind of let go of this notion that I was this superman who didn't need to eat, and, you know, return to eating three square meals a day for a while. And so, yeah, I kind of did this shift twice. You know, it's a very valuable thing to be able to completely shift your belief system, have a mind that's open enough to see the world one way, and then, like, at some point, scrap that and then see the world another way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's my key learning from this whole thing.
All right. A little live follow-up. I just heard back from Jesse. The virtual Starvin is officially called, less controversially called, he said, the water fast week. If anybody wants to join, I think that's possible. Water fast week. Feel free to talk about it, he said.
Yeah.
So to cycle back a little bit, there's this extreme case, then there's the 7-day cancer avoiding idea that we're going to try starting doing mid-February. And so to sum up a little bit from the experiences so far from the 1-day fast, there's more time, strangely, more time.
Yeah.
You look at your watch, you're thinking like lunch break, but then you don't have a lunch break. So we filled lunch breaks with having nice strolls, walking, or just taking a break without eating, which is also possible. For the first, I also didn't want to, you know, change too much about my day. For the first day, I went running in the evening, and I felt pretty okay. Maybe a little weaker than usual, but I'm kind of like tracking how far I'm running and how fast I'm running, and I was very close to what I do on other days. Second fasting day, went up Doi Su Thep, which is quite a hike, about 750 meters in altitude change. Yes, it was a bit funny. I remember Anke was with me. We didn't eat. Then we started a little late, so it was already in the afternoon when the hunger high the peak of the hunger kind of kicks in. Because I remember us walking through the jungle, and Anke was like, "Oh my God, I'm sweating, and there are mosquitoes, and I'm hungry, and this is totally the worst." And then I just couldn't do anything but laugh, and we made a couple of jokes, so nobody really felt bad about anything.
Maybe a few quick tips for anyone who's doing the 7-day water week. The good news is it generally gets easier. I think the first day is the hardest day, because after that you kind of get into this rhythm of not expecting to eat anymore, and I think it's just the first day where you kind of experience a more sort of hunger sensation. However, it's probably not a time to plan to do major things or important things, because you probably kind of have you have more time, you kind of have more energy because you're not digesting, as we mentioned. But you'll expect to feel a little bit strange sometimes. You know, you get into a rhythm, and by the end, you know, you feel really good. You've kind of done this huge cleanse, and look forward to your break fast on the day 8.
Exactly. Also, from a personal standpoint, I want to say that what's really interesting is the randomization, those random stressing of the system. And there's also an interesting confidence. I know I'm pretty certain that I don't have to eat for quite some time. I'm every time on the consecutive day before I had my break fast, I wasn't feeling that hungry. Just the last time we did this, we were in this cafe and we were looking at the menu and already like fantasizing about what we're going to have for breakfast.
Yeah, the night before, yeah. We were like, oh, I'm going to have fruit and eggs and more eggs. We were like, I'm going to have two breakfasts, possibly three.
Possibly three breakfasts.
But when it came to the next morning, we weren't that hungry. We just ended up having normal breakfast.
So the next day it actually feels better than the evening before. So, so I'm confident that I wouldn't need to eat. And that's also a nice feeling to have. It's like,
gives you some flexibility.
Yeah. It's like if you have like a strange travel thing or layover or some other problem or
if it's like, a friend was saying that, Iceland's great, but the food's not that good and expensive. We were thinking, well, we could go to Iceland, but just do a 7-day water fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Save some money.
Do fasting in expensive places. For me, it's also like a learning experience. Taking something away that you are really used to and that you provides you with a new contrast that you're missing before. And I mentioned this on earlier podcast episodes. Our brain likes everything that's similar and the same, and it likes routines and all that kinds of stuff, but it only learns from differences. So not having food on one day actually provides some kind of extra attention, appreciation for the other days. And I want to actually extend that principle, experiment a little bit how that goes, to maybe things like having a digital Sabbath or digital fasting kind of idea, where maybe for a day, which I have not done for quite some time, at least not intentionally, where for a day, for example, I wouldn't use my smartphone or the computer or a TV or anything like that. Taking something away that you're used to having on a very, very regular basis helps reevaluate a little bit what it actually is.
Random stresses.
Yeah.
Especially beneficial for our modern diets, which tend to be quite stable and controlled. Another bit of 7-day water fast greybeard wisdom from my experience is some people who are interested in their weight, muscle mass and whatever, you're unlikely to lose much mass over 7 days. I was definitely a bit slimmer after 21 days. Wasn't that much. I did lose a little bit of muscle mass. I was definitely a bit weaker than I was before. But I put it straight back on fairly quickly. And I think 7 days, you know, it's a well-documented experience, a 7-day fast, so no problem at all.
And even though I don't have a control group to my own experience, I can say that just from the three fasting days I did in the last 3 weeks, I have like apps like I never had before. So Chris and me were joking, like that's the must be the shortcut to have apps, because I didn't do any like crunches or anything like that, but I really feel that I'm lost some body fat. I have no body fat measurements or anything, but so it looks pretty good so far. Feels good. It's kind of like fun. It's also cool that we can do it not by ourselves.
Yeah.
And now that Jesse's even providing the remote fasting for anybody who wants to join, that's so feel free, any hobos. Check out Jesse's podcast. We will link to it in
Smart
the show
Drugs
notes.
Marks.
Yes, and his blog and everything else that Jesse's doing. And maybe, since we haven't mentioned this for quite some time, you could follow us on Twitter at HoboCEO. We also have a little Facebook page.
And give us a nice iTunes review.
Yeah, we would really appreciate if you hop over to iTunes and give us a little review.
Marvelous.
Cool.
So thanks for listening. See you next time.
With updates from the...
Oh, yeah, we'll have to do a before and after or during the process podcast.
Will do. Talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Hovering, lunching, launching, morality, morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting.